lifelong Mets fan, it's a tremendous thrill to be joined by Jerry Kuzman, winner of 222 games during a big league career that spanned from 1967 through 1985, and was the top left-handed starting pitcher on Gil Hodges' Mets teams. In fact, Jerry, you became part of the rotation in 1968, Gil's first year at the helm of the club, went on to finish runner-up to Johnny Bench for National League Rookie of the Year honors with 19 victories, 7 shutouts, and a 2.08 ERA. What amount of confidence did Gil instill in you to produce the rookie year that you had?
Well, Gil was a lot of fun that year. You know, we'd just gotten him from Washington, and the reports were that he was a very strict, hard-to-play-for manager. But when he came to the Mets, he was a lot of fun. I mean, he had fun with joking around, laughing every day, and mainly observed us all year to see just what the players we were.
Talk about the impact he had in terms of maybe motivation, preparation, and confidence to the pitching staff collectively, because it was one that was very young, relatively untested with yourself, Tom Seaver, Nolan Ryan, and, you know, in short order would become a group that would be the driving force to the 1969 championship.
The second year is when he really stuck his toe in the ground and said, you know, here's how we're going to play ball. He knew us all by then by watching us for a year. And so the second year, he laid down the rules and the basics, and this is how we're going to play ball. And he just wanted everybody to, don't worry about anybody else. Worry about your own position, what you can do, and you'll give 100% every day. You'll always be ready and on time. And that's the way we played that year. And as far as preparing, he was always well prepared, 3-4 steps ahead of the other manager. And also that far ahead of his own players. So he knew what we were about. He knew what situations we could handle and which ones we couldn't. And he wouldn't let us in there in situations we couldn't handle, where we may embarrass ourselves or hurt the ball club or lose. And so he always had the right guys in the right positions at the right time and did a wonderful job.
So heading into 1969 from that 68 season, ninth place finish, it was obvious that not many, if anyone, could foresee what was to come. But and just in what you said, I mean, certainly there were signs of improvement, but, you know, did you, your teammates, and did Gil in particular have a sense that there was going to be a significant turn of the corner?
None of those players did. Carlson had written a book about Gil Hodges, and I didn't read the book, but I had heard reports from other guys that had, and of course, reports were how strict Gil Hodges was. Well, it was just the opposite when he came to New York. But yeah, he knew what he was doing, and the second year, he sure proved it.
So, you know, after a tremendous late-season run in 1969 to overtake the Cubs of the division, NLCS sweep of the Braves, then comes the World Series against the Orioles. You pitched 6 no-hit innings and eventually won Game 2 in Baltimore, then got the start in Game 5 with your team up 3-1. You fell behind 3-0 in the third inning. And as we saw in this most recent World Series, some managers might yank their starting pitcher in a situation such as that. That was just the nature of baseball, how it was then in regards to the starting pitchers. And, of course, you did stay in there. You know, the Mets rallied. You were able to get Davey Johnson to fly out to Cleon Jones to end the game, 5-3 victory. But going back to that third inning, down 3-0, was there any indication from Gil that he was contemplating going to the bullpen, or did he have the trust in not only you, but that you would settle down, but also the trust that the offense would produce enough runs?
He showed no indication of taking me out. And like I say, Gil knew his players. In 68, he let us go through the test, and he could see just how much we could do. He saw me pitch innings against, was it 11 or 12 innings against the Giants. But he knew I was stamina, and Gil knew a lot about pitching, and each individual picture and what they could do. So Gil, the reason Gil didn't contemplate taking me out is he was watching what kind of stuff I had, and I was still throwing good. Yeah, the home run that Dave McNally hit, that was supposed to be a bunting situation. So we were all playing for the bunt. We were playing exactly how Gil wanted us to play.
Pitcher Dave McNally up. The Mets are playing him to bunt. Some bunt. Into the Baltimore bullpen. The Orioles lead 2-0.
So that was a complete surprise when he swung away and hit the ball out of the ballpark. Really, I mean, you take that away and they're only leading 1-0. So that's the reason there. I mean, he left me in and, you know, I threw well the rest of the game.
I spoke with Gil Hodges Jr. recently, and one of the many topics that I discussed with him in regards to his father was the managerial job he did with that 69 club, and you had touched on what I'm going to ask. The notion of the miracle Mets to some outsiders may make it seem that the World Series championship was more a product of divine intervention than it was, you know, the great pitching, the defense, and the ability for Gil to get the most out of his players with the way he worked the lineup. So that said, do you think that his managerial accomplishments in that season get overlooked, especially when you examine his resume from a Hall of Fame perspective?
Well, I certainly don't overlook it. But, all the credit goes to Gil Hodges. I did not believe that we would have won without Gil Hodges. He was that great a manager. And, of course, we had the talent, but he had to take that talent and mold it. You know, and put us all in the right place at the right time and encourage us the right way. And, I mean, Gil was just an extreme, wonderful leader. I can't explain how, great he was to our ball club.
Now, Gil's death of a heart attack came just before the 1972 season, certainly a shock to former teammates and fans that loved and respected him. What effect did it have on the team, both in the immediate aftermath and going forward that season?
Well, it had a huge effect on all of us, on everybody he touched, and especially his family in the ballpark. I was the only player that stayed down in West Palm Beach with the coaches and Gil. When we went on strike the day he first had the heart attack. No, we went on strike the day he had the heart attack and died, And so that was a tough time down there. It really was. I remember going to the hospital and being, led into a room where the coaches were. And that's when Rube Walker told me that Gil had died. And it was just like somebody took a sledgehammer and hit you over the head. It was shocking.
Often I hear Tom Seaver give unending credit to Gil Hodges for his overall success as a pitcher, including during his 1992 Hall of Fame speech. Would you say that Gil had a similar impact on your career, even after his passing in 1972, moving forward to a 21-win season for you in 1976? Would you say that Gil had a great influence on you through the end of your career in the mid-80s?
Gil still has an effect on me. There's a lot of things I do in life today that remind me of Gil, or I think of Gil, how he would do things. And he was a great leader. He led with a silent voice and a strong hand. And gosh, it's just so unfortunate that he passed away so early in life, because had he lived, he would have made the Mets a powerhouse for many years to come.
Another thing I asked Gil Hodges Jr., and I'll ask you as well, is the case for Gil Hodges in Cooperstown. Obviously, you can only really speak to his ability as a manager, having played with him for 4 seasons. and the type of person he was. But when you look at his body of work, as they say, as a player, as a manager, as a representative for the game of baseball, what would be the most compelling argument you could make for Gil Hodges that could best influence someone debating whether or not to vote him in?
First of all, I'd say he was a team leader. He was a gentleman on and off the field, and anybody you talked to that played with him always held him in high esteem with the highest regards. Gil Hodges also hit 14 grand slams. That was talked about a lot by people that played with him and against him that I remember in conversations. Now, hitting 14 grand slams in that era is, you know, is an exceptional record. Because after that, you know, the ballparks, the newer ballparks became smaller. The ball became more livelier. And the strike zone became bigger. Just everything, the different rules changed. I mean, pitchers threw at hitters a lot back then. It's, you know, it's basically outlaw today. You see very little of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, today, if a pitcher throws at a guy, he's thrown out of the game. Well, back then, that didn't happen. I mean, but Gil hit 14 grand slams in the, you know, the top of situations there were. Not take anything away from anybody that hits a grand slam, but the 14 he hit, I know, was meaningful to a lot of people.
Certainly, all the hitting statistics that he has that are seen today kind of get dwarfed based on the eras that have come since his playing days. And also, his fielding was underrated significantly, considering that the Gold Glove didn't come into effect until later in his career, and he won the first three at first base.
You know, that's another subject. I heard players that he played with, teammates, people played against, talked about with his soft hand. They said there was no such thing as a bad hop to Gil Hodges on any throw over to him or a ground ball to him. He made every hop. If it was a bad hop or a good hop, whatever, he made them all look like good hops. That's how excellent a fielder he was.
I mean, you take in all the, you know, the criteria for the Hall of Fame. What's unique about the Baseball Hall of Fame compared to other sports is the character aspect and, you know, respect for the game. I don't know the exact terminology, but it seems like with the way things are today with people trying to get in the Hall of Fame, you think that Gil Hodges would be looked at more fondly because he not only has the statistics, he has the managerial success with the 69 Mets, but also of his just overall the overall respect others had for him when he played.
He was respected and revered by everybody. The umpires, the opponents, the people he played with, the players they managed. When Gil walked into the room, there was silence. I mean, people knew his presence when he walked in the room, and he commanded that presence. But, and it was just a silence. I mean, Gil could walk into the room and not say a word, and just all attention focused towards him. He was that kind of guy. And as character as he had, and as great a manager he was, he never wanted to be called into his office because Gil was always business. And I can only probably think of a couple of times personally with me where Gil, approached me or said something to me where with a sense of humor, but it was always business. If he had called in his office, it was for something that bad happened, and it wasn't going to be good. Gil didn't call you. You could throw a no-hitter, Gil wouldn't call you in his office. If you did something bad, you would get called in his office. I only was called in his office one time. It was to be something that I had hurt my arm, and he would question me about whether I hurt it shooting a shotgun or pitching in a game in Frisco. But, it's amazing how he was respected and revered.
Jerry Kuzman speaking very highly of his respect and admiration of Gil Hodges. Many share that feeling, from former players that he managed, from former teammates, from those he played against, from family members, and from fans. The Golden Era vote takes place Sunday, December 7th, and on Monday, December 8th, we'll find out if Gil Hodges gets his long-awaited honor of being a member of the Hall of Fame. And we'll also see if Tony Oliva, Jim Cott, and Minnie Minoso, as well as six others, get their just due of being enshrined in Cooperstown. For now, many thanks to Jerry Kuzman for his time. Thanks to you for listening. And we'll talk with you next time on Baseball As It Was.